Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowestpriceguarantee.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. I'm joined today by a couple of special guests. Their names are Josh and Dakota, and they are the hosts of the Somewhere in the Pines podcast. You guys might be familiar with that. We did a promo for it a while back. Comes out of Both And Studios. That's Josh Hallmark's studio. And Josh and Dakota, they've been working to kind of continue on some of the same work that Josh has been doing and taking it several steps further. And they're going to be the best ones to explain to you what they're doing on the show. It's super fascinating. First and foremost, Josh and Dakota, thank you guys so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
I realize I said Josh seven times right then, and I'm looking at the screen and it says Joshua. Do you go by Joshua?
Oh, anything's fine. Yeah.
Anything's fine.
Either one's fine.
He usually goes by Josh, but ever since we met Josh Hallmark, we had to switch it up a little bit.
Listen, I have a solution for this. I have two girls with the same name, and this is what I do. So Josh Hallmark can be Josh, and you're good Josh.
Oh, man. I love it.
That'll help everybody differentiate between the two of you guys. So how's things? How's things over on the West Coast?
Good.
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, just got through some snow and ice and rain, but beautiful over here now.
Snow, ice, and rain. That sounds worse than what we're getting here in Michigan.
Yeah. That's a typical Oregon winter right there.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ours has not been too bad, but we got a good 10 inches today. School was closed, which meant I got a day off, which is always nice. So first and foremost, can you guys talk to me about, so the basis of the podcast is you guys are doing work out searching for the caches of Israel Keyes, which obviously everybody knows Josh has been working on the Israel Keyes case for seems like decades now. Let's talk a little bit about what your backgrounds are and how you guys came to be connected to Josh and started doing this work. I know that, is it Josh? Are you the one that's from Alaska?
No, Dakota's from Alaska.
Damn it. I had a 50% chance of getting that right. Yeah, I knew it was one of you guys. Dakota's, you're from Alaska, which is where Keys were from. But yeah, if you guys can go, I'll let you go first, Dakota, and kind of break down like what your background is and what led you to where you're at today.
Yeah, I grew up in Alaska, and I was born in Washington, up in Puget Sound area, all hot spots for Keys. And I had a recording studio up there. We played music and recorded music. And so I'm kind of familiar with the recording process and editing process and things like that. I commercial fished up there for 5 years. And then I ended up moving to Portland to pursue music. And that's when I met Joshua Ash. And music didn't pan out and ended up being a contractor. And that's what I'm still doing is contracting and remodels and things like that. And so all of those things had such a, you know, we're so in line with Keyes and the things that, you know, he was a contractor, a fisherman, things like that. And so it was really, you know, he spent a lot of time in Washington, a lot of time in Alaska. So it was right. Immediate antenna went up when I found out about who he was and what he did. it just immediately drew a great amount of interest.
When was that? When did you learn about Israel Keyes?
Boy, it must have been 2020.
Years in March, I think.
Yeah, I think 2020. And I found out about him through Josh Hallmark's show, True Crime Bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Josh and I were working on a project together. And Joshua and I were working on a project together. And
good Josh.
Good Josh.
Good Josh, yeah. And I think we were both just shocked that no one was really looking for the caches, you know, and we're both outdoorsmen and, you know, camping and fishing and hiking, and Josh does tons of foraging and things like that. So it was just, it seemed like it was kind of meant to be that, you know, we can actually go out and do some good and do the things that we love at the same time. So
that's awesome. So good Josh. When you guys met, you said you met when in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
When you guys met, had you guys already kind of like latched onto this Israel Keyes idea, or was it prior to that?
Oh, no, we met 20 years ago.
Yeah, 20 plus years ago, or around 20 years ago, I'd say. Yeah,
we played in a band together for years and toured and recorded an album and stuff like that. So we've known each other for a long time, and we ended up in the same line of work. I mean, working for the same company also. So
Joshua, what is your background?
So I'm just like Dakota, from a spot where Keith spent a lot of time, lived for a little while, New York State, Western New York. And I lived there for the majority of my life until I moved out to Oregon to pursue music. And basically the same thing. I've just been just a blue collar contractor kind of guy, remodeler, for years and years and years. And Dakota and I, once we stopped playing music together, we wanted to do another creative project, because just working construction all the time is really boring.
Yeah.
So we wanted to do something creative again. And we decided to like try to figure out like what podcast to do. And my wife and I, we do like a lot of backpacking, and we spent a lot of time backpacking in Washington, where while Keyes was still in Washington, and, you know, finding out that he was in the same places that we were backpacking was just an absolutely terrifying thing for me. And, you know, I grew up in Western New York. I used to work at Burger King, and my friends and I from Burger King, we would always go out and go to like haunted houses or, you know, scary houses and just try to like spook each other. And this felt like a good experience, a good opportunity to kind of like have those scary moments being out in the woods, trying to find something that could lead to something actually really important in the end. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. You know, we've been just going at it ever since then, 4 years now. So
yeah, minus the music, because I just came from my son's band concert. Oh. And he inherited my musical talent. He plays the triangle in the high school band.
It's a tough one to play.
Yeah. Don't knock.
Yeah, real tough. I one of the songs he played two. I saw him bang the triangle twice, and we were on our way home, and I was like, you only have two notes in that song. He's like, no, I don't know how to read the music. Like, that's my boy.
Yeah, no solos for him.
Right. But beyond the music, we're kind of all cut from the same cloth. I was, you know, I grew up working in construction before I was a fireman. Then I still continued to be a contractor all the time that I still was a fireman until I started doing this about 10 years ago. And I also spent a lot of time backpacking. I do a lot of Western hunts, which equals putting a pack in your bag and going to live out in the mountains for a week at a time. Yeah, well, you know what we should do is I think that we should try to arrange like a true crime like backpacking camping trip, and I'll tell you who's not coming.
Yeah, we know.
Fucking Hallmark. Yeah. There's no goddamn way. If there's not a bidet, and he's not coming.
We'll have to roll out the 60-foot.
We got him in the woods.
We did get him out in the woods, yeah.
This past summer, we got him out searching for a cache with us. And he fell, and I don't think he had a great time at all. But it was a lot of fun, and we got it recorded. So it'll come out at some point.
That's fantastic. So how did you guys, you're out on the West Coast. Josh is on the East Coast. And you're listening to his podcast. You're into it. Then how does this connection get made?
Oh man, it took forever.
Long time, yeah.
Yeah. We started working on the project, and you know, we reached out almost right away and just let him know that we're going to be doing this, and if he wants to talk anytime, that, you know, we're open to it. But I'm sure he gets probably 50 emails a day, people saying the same thing or something similar. And it wasn't until it was maybe 3 years later, we ended up connecting with the FBI, and we found out that a really big tip of his was never actually submitted to the FBI. So we wanted to make that connection, let him know that, you know, it's really important. The FBI thinks it's important. So we had our private investigator contact his team, and that got their attention, and it kind of all worked out from there. So
when you guys started doing this, was it originally intended to be for a podcast, or were you just like, this is a thing we want to do, is go out and search for these caches?
Yeah, it was meant to be a podcast. I mean, we wanted to, you know, kind of use a new, you know, our own format. It's more of a live format. And so we had a pretty good idea of the final product that we wanted to show the audience. But yeah, we were really lucky to eventually get Josh's attention, I think. And it's helped us quite a bit.
A good opportunity for us to like get out in the woods again, because, you know, as you get older, it's harder to make trips to go out and do things that are fun out in the woods. So it was kind of a double thing for us. We could go out and have fun, but also do something that sounded really important. So
yeah, it's awesome. How old are you guys?
42.
I'm 40.
43. Yeah, 42.
Young whippersnapper still. I just turned 46. I feel 60.
Old man.
Yeah. But, you know, you guys know doing that kind of thing, you know, getting out in the woods and climbing mountains and stuff like that. Like that's what motivates me to keep myself in shape is,
yeah,
because it can be grueling. And Josh, did I read right that you're like a survivalist too? Like you get into like foraging and primitive survival stuff.
Oh, I wouldn't say I'm a survivalist. But I spend a lot of time in the woods. Most of my free time is either playing hockey or spending time in the woods with my wife. So we do a lot of foraging, like I said, a lot of backpacking, and we get one of the permits for a local logging area.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really nice and open where no one's ever back there. So we can just walk in the woods whenever we want. And I just like to search for, you know, antler sheds and stuff like that. It's always a treasure hunt, no matter what, for me. I'm out there.
That's awesome. It's awesome you do it with your wife too, because you know who else is not going to be doing any of this? My wife. Not your aunt. Every time I tell her, I'm like, I'm going to Colorado. I'm going to go up Mount Zirkle and do a 8-day elk hunt up there. She just goes, eh.
Yeah. Like, have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Have fun. Call me when you get back. That sounds like a good time. Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. So, You guys end up connecting with Josh, and the podcast comes out. It's been a big success. Sounds great, and it is kind of a unique format. It's a super interesting listen. The thing that impresses me the most about it, though, is that you guys. It's kind of like, you know, kind of after my own heart, where like just regular folks, just like me. When I started, I was a firefighter in small town Michigan. And, you know, you guys are contractors up there in Oregon, and then you've made contacts all the way through to the FBI. How did that happen? How did you get to the point where you're actually working with the FBI?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. You know, we knew that we wanted to submit the tips and the, you know, the leads that we were uncovering, and we just thought it was really important. And we didn't really know how to do that. And one day we were working on, I think it was episode 4, And at the end of the session, you know, we'd spend hours in the basement just working on episodes and rearranging, mixing, editing, all that stuff. And at the end of the day, we just said, you know, I just said, let's just call them. Let's, you know, we just decided, because it's nerve wracking, you know, like we have no business doing any of this stuff. So
right.
I just called, and, you know, Josh and I sat there and it rang, and eventually someone picked up and it was Ted Holla. It was the guy we were looking for. You know, it was the guy that's in charge of the case for Washington State. And we just got really lucky. And he's such an incredible asset to us. And I hope that we're an asset. I think we're an asset for him as well, or else he probably wouldn't be wasting his time with us.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's how it happened. It was just that easy.
What was that first conversation when he picked up that phone like for you guys? Because I could think back of the times where I've had, you know, when I first started making phone calls like that, like, and then they answer and you're like, hey, man, yeah. I'm somebody you don't know. Yeah. What was that like for you guys?
Well, luckily we got the answering machine first. And so I wasn't really prepared to like leave a message. So I immediately hung up, because I'm not the most eloquent person in the first place. So I was like, all right, Josh and I sat down and we wrote out a message to leave on the answering machine. And then the second time I called back is when Special Agent Holla picked up.
Like, oh,
so I kind of had a script to go off of,
yeah.
Luckily, or else he probably would have just hung up on me. And so I just kind of read the script that we had. You know, I had the case number, I had all the stuff we wanted to talk about ready to go. And he was just really, really into it. He was ready to talk. And he immediately just, you know, we weren't allowed to go on the record right then because we had to go through the clearance process, the media clearance process.
Right.
So he kind of coached us on all that stuff and how to do that. And we were able to, you know, it took a couple months to get through the process. And then we had to submit all our questions and things like that ahead of time. And then we were actually able to start having conversations.
Yeah, we didn't think that this was like abnormal either. We just assumed like most podcasts speak with the FBI or law. And it was crazy because we actually reached out to Nick Edwards from True Crime Garage.
Yeah.
And, you know, we told him kind of what we were doing and asked him to mentor us a little bit. And he was just like blown away that, you know, they've done over 700 episodes and they've never had that kind of interaction with the FBI. And, you know, just recently we released three episodes, it's like 3-hour conversation with four FBI profilers that actually covered Keyes's case. And the first thing that Julia Cowley asked was like, are you guys, what was the word?
Informants.
Yeah. Some sort of
official FBI informants. And we're like, oh,
I mean, yeah. Do I get a badge? What? Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It was
Elvis.
Very strange to realize that this is really like abnormal for this to happen. And we're super fortunate to have it happen, especially with Ted Holla.
Yeah. I'm trying to think back. I've got some connections from retired FBI agents. I work a lot with Jim Clemente, yeah. But it seems like anytime I've tried to actually talk to someone with the FBI, that never seems to work out. My investigative journalism students are doing a class where they actually talked to an FBI agent a couple of weeks ago. They had a similar experience to you. I watched their eyes when she answered the phone and they're like, but they didn't get much out of her. She definitely wasn't, you know, and there's the whole media relations thing where you had to go through that to get that approval. So she couldn't say much and they're still working on that. One of our patrons, Teresa in the chat, wanted me to ask, she said, do you know when Ted Holla retires? Is he under mandatory retirement order?
He is. I don't know if he appreciates us talking about it, but he is. It's fairly soon. So, and we kind of think, and Julia Cowley from the consult thinks the same thing, that he's more of a progressive FBI agent. And, you know, there are four victims that they believe are in Washington that they don't know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, and with this being a case that there's no, like, Keyes is dead, you know, mm-hmm. he ended his own life. So there's no way to really pursue anything. I think he just wants to find out at least, you know, any of those victims if he can. So I think he's trying new avenues. This is all speculation, but
yeah,
he's just trying new avenues to try to find a way to reach, to get more tips in, you know.
Is there a plan to, when he retires, to pass the torch so you can continue the work that you're doing with him? Is there somebody like lined up for that?
I'd assume so. We don't really know that information, but I know that Special Agent Jolene Godin, she was in Alaska and she has retired recently. And so somebody else has taken over the case up there. So I'd assume that somebody would be, Washington's a really important state because they know there are four victims there. So I'd assume somebody has to be up to date with it because they're going to, you know, they've been reaching out. There's the new Hulu documentary, docuseries on Keys. And I believe they did that too, to try to get more tips and just try to get the information out there right now. So I assume someone would probably be taking over in some capacity.
I love the idea. I mean, if you take a step back and look at the big picture of the whole story, one that we have like over, when I started doing this in 2015, every lawyer, every cop, and it was like, they didn't want to talk to any media at all, certainly not podcasters. And then it's like, man, we're looking at where we're at now. And, you know, the FBI is encouraging this Hulu documentary. They're realizing that media, that ordinary people working outside of the system are actually affecting change. And then the big thing that I love is that the way this medium, the podcasting medium, has kind of helped push that ball forward. And it's a lot of guys like you that are, you know, they were not, you know, just ordinary people that picked up a microphone in their basement and decided to make a podcast. And it's actually like affecting real change in the world. I have a serious question, but before that, Susan in the chat just realized that you said you're a hockey player. You're missing the Canada-US
final game.
No, I'm
right.
I'm recording it. Don't.
She's putting scores right now in the chat. Like, but can you talk about, because you guys have made some like significant strides forward in the case with the FBI. Can you guys talk about a couple of like, what each of you, tell me, what is the thing you're most proud of that you've done so far with Somewhere in the Pines?
Well, I'd say, like, as Dakota said a little while ago, I think the most amazing thing to me is that we are an asset to the FBI, because it just doesn't seem like that was something that would ever be possible. And 3 weeks ago, we had an off-the-record conversation with Special Agent Halla, and I walked away from it with the very clear understanding that what we're doing is important, and he feels that it's important. And just this past Monday, we submitted a 40-page document with 15 different topics that we wanted to cover, of new tips, new leads that we talked about in this off-the-record conversation that he wanted information on. So that to me is just like getting compliments from the FBI that we're doing good work, I think is most, it's just something I never expected to happen. And it is just, it feels really good. It feels like we're doing something good.
You are. And that's amazing. Yeah. How about you, Dakota? You can't use the same one.
Well, the FBI just, Ted has always said that the public is our best resource, is their best resource for solving any of this, anything having to do with Keys. And if we can be the, you know, help channel that stuff from the public to the FBI, I'm proud to do that job, you know, because there's so much information out there, you know, like I think we'll probably talk about the Laplace cache eventually. That is something that was just floating around on the internet, you know, and there was no way that the FBI has the manpower or the time to be able to go through all that stuff and, you know, vet that information. And it's, you know, if we can just help them in that small way, it can be a really big deal.
Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Truth and Justice is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. I thought one of you was going to say the Laplace cache, so tell that story.
Yeah. So, I mean, that wouldn't have happened without Josh Hallmark and his research team. And then obviously it wouldn't have happened without our connection to Ted Halla. We were able to take some information that when we first, the very first phone call we had with Josh Hallmark, that was like an official phone call, he gave us, immediately just jumped in and gave us a ton of information. And it was all stuff we didn't have. And we were just getting prepped for our in-person meeting with, it would have been our second meeting with the FBI. That's right, Josh, second meeting?
Yes. Yeah.
And so we were getting prepped to send away a packet with all our questions. And we had that conversation with Hallmark, and he just really dumped a ton of cash information on us. And we decided that it was a good idea to, you know, to take that along and pass that stuff along. So again, we're, you know, just taking any information we can get and making sure that if it seems like really valuable information, then it needs to get to law enforcement. And so we were able to get it on the sheet. And when we got there, or even before we got there, their media liaison got in touch with us and said, we need more information on this topic. And so I think that Josh and I immediately knew, like, oh shit, like, we're, you know, there's something to this. And so we were able to bring him all the information during the in-person meeting. And he immediately, I think, was it the first thing that we went through then?
No, cell photos were the first thing.
Cell photos were first. Yeah. But eventually when we got to that topic, he pulled out maps that they had retrieved off of Keyes' computer. And one of the maps was of the exact location that the witness said that they found a cache. So we were able to connect all this spider web of connection, able to actually confirm it with Hallmark's information, our information, and the FBI's information. So
yeah, and then they found it. So what are you guys?
Well, they didn't actually find it yet. So they did go down to go contact the person that submitted the tip.
Okay.
So it's this right now. It's just the first potential cat. So the person, the witness, claimed to have found it and then submitted to the law enforcement. And so the FBI went down to go and try to track it down, but it sounds like the law enforcement doesn't have it. So there is no, unfortunately at this point, no evidence to pull from it. But what is really important about it, even beyond that, is that was the first map that they pulled from Ms. Keyes's computer that actually had a grid map all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the FBI actually showed us this map as well, with different pinpoints throughout the entire greater New Orleans area. You know, he also showed us some other new evidence where they have a receipt from a Walmart just around the corner from where the cache was found. And another thing that we just sent to the FBI is that the car that he was witnessed in is the exact same car that his mother had, that I don't think the FBI knew about yet. We actually have the VIN number and everything, so we're trying to make those connections for them. It hasn't physically been found, but it was the first potential cache that they had a chance to go and recover in the last 12 years.
Yeah, that's incredible. Have they offered you guys a job yet?
You're too old, actually. You have to be really young to get. Right.
We aged out.
Yeah.
You're already at mandatory retirement age before you start.
And what's cool too about that is, if I can just jump in, is that, you know, the researchers, Kim Kay was the one that actually found that tip. And same thing, she's just an average person that enjoys doing research, and she's dedicated the last, I think, 4+ years of her life searching throughout the internet to try to find Keyes connections. And, you know, it was one tip that, you know, 20,000 people probably saw that video and saw that comment and never did anything with it. And it was her that found it, connected to Josh, and then Josh got it to us. So it's all these little tiny connections from people that are just trying the hardest to make connections.
Just ordinary people, mm-hmm. just putting all their heads together. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So you guys spent a lot of time like out in the woods looking for stuff. What are you using for, I mean, you're not just, it's not needle in a haystack, right? You're not just wandering through the woods hoping you stumble across one. What kind of resources are you using to try to narrow down where you're searching?
So the first thing, I think the first year, all we did was just research. So try to learn everything about the case, everything that we could about caches. The FBI has found two with Keyes' help prior to his death. So we did a lot of research on that and places that he went. And, you know, we actually went to the places where the caches were found to try to get any insight as to what other little landmarks are in the area that he could have used to decide that this is a good spot, or why is this a good place to place a cache. And from that, you know, one thing we found, Dakota found a caching manual from the military And a lot of the items in the Cashin Manual, which Israel Keyes was in the military for 3 years, line up with different landmarks that are at the location of the first cat in Blake Falls Reservoir, New York. So spending all the time doing the research. So whenever we go out to search, because it's a lot of money, it's, you know, we're just
right
two people trying to figure this out. So we have to make sure when we go somewhere that we actually plan ahead and we're not just walking around the woods aimlessly. You know, we'll go up to we'll spend a 3-day weekend up in the Olympic Peninsula. You know, the first day we'll go to all the target areas that we want to check out and scout them to see if it's a really actually a good spot to look, because we're just looking at maps or Google Maps. So we'll do a day of scouting, and then, you know, we'll go back to the campfire and talk about what we think is the best, most priority, the highest priority. And then from there, the next day we'll go out with metal detectors and basically plan out a search in all the different areas that we think are good.
That's all. And then how does that turn into an episode? What can people expect if they tune into the episodes of Somewhere in the Pines? Because you guys get a lot of that kind of fly on the wall type of audio.
Yeah, the whole premise was to take the audience along with mm-hmm. us, you know, for the investigation and the ups, the downs, you know, the fun parts, the sucky parts, you know, just to kind of show them the process and have them kind of, you know, be a part of it with us, you know. So that's kind of where the live aspect came in to the show is a lot of these places are incredibly beautiful natural spaces, you know. I mean, they're incredible. I mean, I would go to these areas, you know, if I wasn't doing this, you know, just mm-hmm. just to exist in these spots, you know. So it was really important to us to show the environment and show, you know, all these different locations and really like give you like a palpable feeling for like what it's like there.
And I think a big influences for us when we first started talking about doing this was the Blair Witch Project, the show Alone, and the podcast Someone Knows Something.
Yep. I was going to say this. You guys had that same kind of David Ridgen vibe about it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I've tried to capture that. Like, usually if you listen to one of the Truth and Justice seasons, like the first like two or three episodes of a season, I try to, you know, I'm rolling tape all the time. Everything we're doing, we're capturing all that on. And then like we get into the thick of it and we're doing it in real time. And it's like, okay, well, that's out the window now. I don't have time to keep doing that now because mine is all done week by week, everything in real time. So there's always the first couple episodes. But I love David. He's like one of my true crime podcast heroes. I love his style, and you guys really capture that same type of vibe. Yeah. And it's fantastic.
It takes a lot. I mean, it's so much editing, and I mean, we record quite a bit. I think we're getting better at being selective on when we turn the recorder on, because it was so much stuff to go through so far to get that first six episodes up, you know?
Yeah. It's so hard. Cause you know, I've interviewed David, and you know, he rolls all that when he's eating breakfast, whatever he's doing, he rolls tape all day, every day. And whenever I do that, I get back, I'm like, man, there was this really cool moment when this happened and this happened. It's like, well, we'll just have to go through our three different recording devices and the 9 hours of audio and figure out where that was at. You know,
and then you get back to it and it wasn't good at all.
Right. That's, oh my God, man. My audience has heard this story before, but the worst, my old producer, Mike, it was our season 7. We were down in Bloomington, Illinois. And we had him when we were sitting there talking, and he was like, there's, you know, those giant windmills are everywhere. And we had this conversation about it, and he was just like, what the hell is up with all these windmills, you know? And like I thought later in edit, I was like, you know what, man, we should like, let's grab that. That'll be a good kind of fly on the wall type of thing. And you know, we can lay that under as we're kind of going from place to place. And then we listened to it, and the truck was too loud and you couldn't hear any of it. So we went back and tried to recreate it and found out immediately both the shittiest actors that we aired it to. It's like, hey, Bob, what's with all these windmills? Well, those are for power, Mike. What are they powering down here in Bloomington that needs all that electricity, Bob? It was so fucking, so bad. So bad. So that's my recommendation. Don't just skip it. Don't do that. It's no good. It doesn't work.
Yeah, we've got about a 40-minute clip of us sitting in a car with two birds on the hood of the car pecking at the windshield, and we're like, "This is going to be the most amazing audio. I can't wait to listen to an episode." Hasn't made it in yet. I don't know if it ever will, but it was definitely a good clip.
That's awesome. Well, I'm loving the work you guys are doing, and I was just looking at the feed. I've listened to a lot of episodes. I haven't heard all of them yet, but I see your season one has 16 episodes, and I presume you guys aren't done. What can we expect moving forward?
Yeah, we have, right now we're in a mid-season break. We're trying to do some editing and realizing that we have a lot of tips that we need to submit to the FBI. We want to take time and make sure we do that above everything else. And honestly, it just takes a lot of time to edit. So now it's finishing editing the last few episodes, and we'll get back to releasing those shortly. But we've got probably about 7 more to go. With we going to Lake Crescent, Ozette Lake, Port Angeles, Squim, Dungeness, and each place has something that we find super interesting, that good new tips and new things. And we have a lot of audio that we haven't released from the FBI interviews yet, that we think is really important. It's the end of half of the season is going to be really good. We had a little bit of a detour because Special Agent Hollis showed us a new piece of evidence and we were allowed to release it. And we just felt it was really important to spend the time to close the loop on that. So it really took up, I don't know, 5-6 episodes or so, just kind of running through, you know, what this new information could be. But yeah, no, we're excited to get back out in the woods and show people what we've found so far.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I think everybody should check it out. If you're if you take truth and justice and true crime bullshit and someone knows something and mash them together, it's something that it's just really organic. It's got a great vibe to it. These guys are doing amazing work. You can check it out anywhere where you get your podcast. Go check out Somewhere in the Pines. I promise you won't be disappointed. Josh and Dakota, thank you guys so much for joining me. It's great talking to you guys.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kate Wood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.